Are you looking for a podcast that is the perfect blend of paranormal and pop culture?
Starting off with spooky stuff where we talk cryptids and ghosts.
And then we have our pop culture section where we sometimes have celebrity guests.
Whoa.
Yeah, do you want more?
Boy, howdy.
There's always genre news and all kinds of celebrity deaths. All kinds of it. If you're a celebrity and you die, we're going to talk about it.
I actually was hoping for UFOs.
Well, bet your ass we got that too at the end.
Earthling Entertainment. New episodes every Thursday.
Make sure to check us out anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Zombie Strains, the podcast that watches all the zombie movies. This week we go back to Mexico for a film that features black magic, King Devil, and Dr. Satan. That's right, it's 1968's Dr. Satan versus Black Magic.
You know, I've seen people act like that in pictures. What do they call them, zombies or something?
Zombies.
What's a zombie?
Just what is a zombie?
Well, a zombie, there's, Mr. Bill is...
The living dead.
They are the living dead.
Get into zombies.
He's a zombie.
Because a zombie has no will of his own.
It's an army of zombies. No armies could stand.
What is wrong? What is wrong?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Zombie Strains. I'm John.
And I'm Andy.
And I'm Brad.
Hello, producer Brad. You probably had a bit of a challenge this week. I called the film Dr. Satan and the Black Magic in Spanish. It would be Dr. Satan y la Magia Negra. This is a wild movie. I have so many thoughts about this movie. This is going to be one where I actually would really kind of like to get into every detail of the plot, and we just can't do that. So
yeah.
So I'll hit the highlights. Don't you worry.
This is what I thought we would see way more of in the 60s, just bonkers, gonzo stuff.
Isn't this just a goofy delight? Like,
yeah, it was.
Here's the first comparison that came to mind. We'll get to it really quick, but this did not feel like a horror movie. It felt like a Bond movie.
Yes, it did.
Right? Totally. It feels like a spy movie with like two spies. It's almost like From Russia with Love with like the two competing spies. And so we'll get into it, but it's absolutely fascinating. So producer Brad, would you like to tell us how this whole thing came together?
Dr. Satan versus Black Magic was released in the U.S. in 1968. It's the fifth zombie movie we have watched from Mexico. Rogelio A. Gonzalez directed Dr. Satan versus Black Magic. He directed over 60 films in his career, and this is his 47th. He was part of the golden age of Mexican cinema and directed all types of films, from melodramas, comedies, black comedies, and adaptations of classic authors like Oscar Wilde.
Can I interject something about this director? My first thing. So this movie is many things. It is cheesy, it is corny, it is over the top. But you know what it isn't? Bad. It is a competently directed film, and it looks like it the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a highly skilled director who's done a lot of films.
Absolutely, and the whole film looks like it.
But Gonzalez also directed films based on comic books. Gonzalez directed the first Chanak film in 1967. Chanak was a film series based on a comic book adventurer, and if you recall, we discussed these films in our episode on the revived monster. Because the director of the revived monster, Chano Urieta, was in Chanak. So the director of, let me get this right, Dr. Satan versus Black Magic directed the director of the revived monster.
Got it.
Well, you know, this movie, it also feels like a comic book. It feels like, you know, Magneto versus Dr. Doom or something like that, doesn't it?
Yes.
Like, yeah, there's a lot going on that you would want to look at a panel and study it. Gonzalez had a lasting legacy in Mexican cinema. One of his films, Mrs. Morales' Skeleton from 1959, often shows up on the list for the greatest movies in Mexican cinema history.
Whoa. I want to watch that. I want to watch it.
That's on our good titles podcast.
For sure. I won't ruin anything for you, but it's called Mrs. Morales' Skeleton, and Mr. Morales is a taxidermist.
I'm sold.
Sidney T. Brucker wrote the story. He has 11 writing credits, including the first Dr. Satan film from 1966, which means we need to take a moment and acknowledge we missed the first one. It doesn't show up on any list. In the books I have, it doesn't show up. This one is mentioned, but when the articles refer back to the first one, they mention zombies in it.
Oh, no.
Hmm.
So We have to talk.
Well, maybe we need to save it for like a special,
like a bonus episode,
episode or something. Yeah.
This is Andy and I saying we're not waiting any longer to do Night of the Living Dead. That's what we're saying.
I understand the dilemma.
I totally would watch all of the adventures of Dr. Satan, though.
It's the same actor too, but it's a different director.
Interesting.
The cast is full of seasoned actors from Mexican cinema. Joaquin Cordero plays Dr. Satan. He was a very well-known and popular actor with over 200 acting credits. He was the star of the first two Santo films, Santo versus Evil Brain and Santo versus Infernal Men.
What?
Hey.
He was Santo?
No. Was the lead. Santo was the sidekick in those first two films.
Oh, okay. Right. I'm sorry. Santo was Santo. I don't even know why I said
right.
that. Yes. Okay.
So it was after those two that he became the breakout lead.
I gotcha.
Noe Murayama plays Ye Lin. He had a long career as well with over 150 roles between 1955 and 1996. Aurora Clavel plays Dia, henchman to Yin Lee. She was in two Sam Peckinpah films. She played Pat Garrett's wife in Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. And she was also in The Wild Bunch.
You know, I have this fantasy that all of these actors who lived until the 2000s, which is Joaquin and Aurora here, That like at the end of their career, they were in cheesy Mexican soap operas and they were amazing. That's like a dream I'm having.
Well, I think you may call them cheesy, but I don't think the viewers call them cheesy. I think the viewers enjoy them straight.
I think I would enjoy them as well, maybe for different reasons, but they would be delightful to me.
And the last actor I want to bring up was Carlos Agosti, who plays Inspector Bianchi. He voiced Obi-Wan Kenobi in Empire Strikes Back for the Latin American audience. So when you listen to him, does he sound like Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. That's amazing. You know what? The saddest part of this for me is that the acting is really good. And the only reason we're not including clips is they're in Spanish.
Yeah.
You know, like otherwise there would be so much to clip here because it's so good.
Well, I have no record of how well this did. So we enjoyed it. We'll leave it at that. That was a fun movie to watch.
Yes, absolutely. So, Andy, will you please give us, I don't know how quickly you can do an overview of this film, but let's see what you got.
Whew, okay, I'll give it a shot. So, Dr. Satan versus the Black Magic is about two rival evil magicians. One of them is an immortal soul in service to something called King Devil, who's sent from hell out into the world to do his master's bidding.
Correct.
His enemy is Ye Ling, a vampire.
A wizard vampire. Lord,
a wizard vampire from Asia. I think it was unspecified which country.
Yes.
So this movie follows the rivalry of these two sorcerers as they try and steal from each other an alchemical formula that turns anything into gold, pretty much, right?
Yeah, from Dr. Sorensen.
Am I doing okay so far?
You're doing okay.
Okay, there are ostensibly some, quote, heroes in this, like the police, but the film doesn't care about them, and neither will you when you watch this, because the stars of the show are the scenery chewing to evil immortal wizards, and they just go back and forth killing each other and ambushing each other and extorting each other and
kidnapping each other's hench people. And yes, just back and forth.
It's just madness. I don't know what else to say. I think we just need to jump right into it.
Let's get into it, because I want to talk about the opening and I want to talk about Dr. Satan's predicament, because I think it's absolutely delightful and fascinating. So There's an opening credit sequence, right? And it's kind of crazy. It's got, it's a before the credits movie, like back in the old days. I just asked producer Brad to grab a couple of clips of the title music because there's some atonal bits and stuff. It sets the mood really well. Yeah, so it's amazing.
How do you not smile listening
to
that?
I love it. And then we're taken right into this bizarre scene where our hero, whose name is Plutarco Satan, that's Dr. Satan to you, Andy, is summoned from death, from his rest, by the King Devil, who is not Lucifer. There's another reference to a Lucifer, which was a little confusing. First, I just want to play you, and again, we're not going to have a lot of clips here, but I just want to play you the sound of that scene and the voice of King Devil summoning Plutarco Satan back to life.
Plutarco Satan, te he salvado de la justicia del mundo de los vivos para que sigas a mi servicio. Tengo una misión importante para ti.
So you can't see us, but Andy and I are grinning from ear to ear because we're recalling how fun it was to watch this scene. So here's what I understand. And Andy, I want to hear what you think about Dr. Satan's predicament. Dr. Yeah. Satan has died. However, King Devil will not let him rest. And when King Devil needs something, he returns Dr. Satan to the land of the living, but he's gaslighting him because every time he promises, this time, if you succeed, I'll give you eternal rest. But he never does. Like, yes. Is that how you read this as well?
That's how I read it too. Yes. Yeah. So Dr. Satan is like this weary soul.
Yes.
Yeah. It's great.
Devastatingly handsome, weary soul. Let us be
yes.
clear.
Well, yes.
And he tells him the plot right out of the gate. You have to find this formula made by Dr. Sorensen. Okay. That can turn any metal into gold. So they've introduced the concept of alchemy. They've also introduced the concept that the devil, King Devil, would benefit from having, like, his magic isn't sufficient. He needs a way to turn base metals into gold to gain power. It's a ridiculous MacGuffin, and you don't care, right? Yeah.
So I actually think it's even weirder than that. So he wants the formula because the person who has it is going to become so powerful because they have it that he will overthrow King Devil.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. And I think he's talking about Yi Lin, but at one point he mentions yes. Lucifer. So I wonder if Yi Lin works for Lucifer. That's the part that was
Yi Lin works for Lucifer.
So we have so many devils, Satans, and Lucifers here. I don't know which is which, but I love it. And then we get to see so Dr. Satan disappears from the underworld. We assume he's going to reappear in our world. And then we cut to Yelin's hench people. He's got three sidekicks, the aforementioned Angelica. No, it's Dea, right?
It's Dea.
He's got Dea, and then he's got two others. One of them is going to die real soon, and the other one's going to die later in the movie. But it's really about Yelin and Dea and their relationship. So they show up, and they talk about stealing the formula from Dr. Sorensen. But they make it clear in these first scenes that all of his hench people are scared of him, that they think Yelin is terrifying.
Except for Dea, who, while scared of him, also, I think, is in love with him.
I think so. They make that pretty clear.
The movie translated her saying master a lot, but what she was really saying was mi amor.
Oh, okay. And actually, can I say also that the translation on this movie was pretty comprehensible? Like,
yeah,
I think some of them are, some of the things, like they were, like you said, there are words that I just would have translated differently, but on the whole, I had no trouble following the movie from the translation. So everybody goes to the airport because Dr. Sorensen is landing. And so we've got like two villains and their Dr. Satan's going to get some hench people in a second, but
one of the delights of this movie is we have an evil undead sorcerer and we have an evil undead vampire, but they're often in these very mundane locales, like an airport, trying to catch a flag down a taxi
in
like
the middle of the day. Thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now, so at this point, were you confused as to who the hero is?
I don't think there is one.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think Dr. Satan's actually the hero?
Well, I think it's a question we can save for the end, but I want to know who you guys were rooting for.
Yes, we can. Yes. I'll save that for the end. So, but this is why it feels like a Bond movie to me, because beside the fact that they're magical sorcerers, they're doing things like, hey, we've got to get to the airport and kidnap the guy with the secret formula before the quote unquote foreign government does it, right? Like the plot is a James Bond plot. They're just using their vampire powers and their recruited zombies to solve the problems rather than guns or special forces.
And even the sets are very James Bondy sets. Like there's a big skyscraper. There's a big cave supervillain lair. There's, yeah.
And the underground lair of Dr. Satan has like these swooshing doors, like it's some futurist. I mean, he's got a scientific lab where he's conducting magic. It's crazy. Yeah. Anyway, so Dr. Sorensen's planes land. We don't need to know that much about him because he's not going to be around very long. However, can I say that this movie had no references in any of the vehicle movie databases, so I had to look all these vehicles up. I think I got them all. I didn't get every car, but here's the big one. So the plane here is, get ready for this. Do you remember The Earth Dies Screaming? I told you there was a plane called the De Havilland Chipmunk.
Yeah.
Well, here we have the De Havilland Comet 4, which is a jet made by British Airlines and then sold basically to Mexican airlines. So most of the De Havilland Comet 4s in the 60s were owned by Mexican airlines. Anyway, so this is a very, it looks so different than the modern jets we're used to. It has this curved tail. It kind of looks like a B-17 or something, but for passengers. Yeah. It's very strange. And then there is, so Dr. Satan is here, and Dr. Sorensen is suspicious. However, he gets his case, he goes to his hotel, and he's being trailed by everybody. And I want to get this out quick because I think this is super important. So Dr. Satan, except for one scene later, which we will get to, drives the weirdest car I've ever heard of. I had not heard of this car before, but once I figured it out, I had to do a deep dive on it. He drives a 1967 Sunbeam Tiger. Okay. So this is a car made in Britain by a British car maker, Sunbeam, sold in Mexico with a Ford V8 engine in it. So it's a small British roadster with a giant V8 engine in it, and it's a convertible. And so that's the car that cool Dr. Satan drives, the obscure Sunbeam Tiger. And then
it does have a little bit of that James Bond and his sports car vibe to it.
As does Ye Lin's car, which is a 1963 Ford Falcon. So these are the cars of our phone. So just imagine those cars, because I know you've all got them memorized. Of course, Ye Lin's is jet black. And when we get to, there's a scene where there's a kidnapping later where a different car is used, and we will be discussing that at the appropriate time. All right, so then at night, then Ye Lin's hench people break in. They steal his case, but he wakes up and they kill him with a thrown switchblade.
Yes, one of the henchmen's like signature move is throwing a switchblade.
Correct. And they steal the formula and they go back to Ye Lin. But that's not the important part. The important part now is that Dr. Satan needs help, right? He needs to do his plans. He's got to recruit help. So what does he do, Andy?
So he sets up, like, the front of his supervillain lair is a doctor's office.
Yes.
Where
he is Dr. Satan.
Maybe he is a licensed professional. I don't know.
Yeah.
So he has this like faux doctor's office.
I think it's also supposed to be a psychiatrist. I think he's supposed to be a psychiatrist.
Yes, a psychoanalyst is the word they use. Yes. So, and I'm sorry. This is so wild. Anyway, he is recruiting henchmen. He has decided he has one henchwoman named Medusa.
Correct.
And she is actually our first zombie. We can discuss in a minute how these zombies work. But he's decided for whatever reason he needs one more henchman. So he puts an ad in the newspaper.
In the newspaper.
yeah. And for advertising a position at his doctor's office.
Correct.
So
hopefully none of these women said, hey, I'm going to an interview at Dr. Satan's office. I'll see you for dinner tomorrow, because otherwise the jig is up.
So he does have an alter ego as Dr. Ramos.
Yes.
So when we start this scene, there's like a small crowd of young women who are here to apply for Dr. Satan's secretary job.
There's four women here. One of them gets the job and the three others get to live a normal, happy life. But not this woman, unfortunately. So I don't know why he selected this perfect woman other than she had the best bouffant hairdo of the bunch.
Oh, no, it was easy. He asked her, do you have any family? She goes, no, I am alone in this world.
Oh, yeah,
yes, that's right.
He could kill her and no one would notice.
Yeah.
And we get a great Bela Lugosi stare down.
He has the stare, Dr. Satan. He's almost like a hypnotist.
Yeah, so he kind of quasi-hypnotizes the new girl he hired is named Angelica.
Yeah.
And he sort of can put you into he does have to use technology later to actually officially zombify you, but he can put you into sort of a docile state by just staring really intently at you like Bela Lugosi does.
Right. Now we're going to get a quick, we're going to do some quick cuts back, and I want to focus on Dr. Satan. At some point in this part of the movie, the cops find out about Dr. Sorensen's murder, but the movie is really just doing a half-hearted attempt to have somebody try to solve the murder and have it not just be a battle between Dr. Satan and Ye Lin. But
yeah, I don't think we need to talk much about the police, except that periodically this movie will like remember that, oh yeah, the law is like supposedly closing in, and they use the police mostly as a way to introduce tension into some of the scenes, like the police are on their way stuff. But it's not like in the other movies where we've seen where the police are the heroes that you're really rooting for.
Correct. But there's one thing I want to bring up, because they say they have a connection to the International Police Force, and they use a name that I remember from the 70s and 80s movies. Nobody uses it anymore. They get advised by Interpol. Do you remember Interpol?
Mm-hmm. I do remember.
I mean, I'm sure it still exists, but like for a while in the 70s and 80s, spy movies featured Interpol prominently, right? Like, get the latest data from Interpol or whatever. And that happens in this movie, but it's not a thing anymore. But again, the cops don't matter. And we have to get back to Dr. Satan because we go down to his lab in an elevator. Andy, this lab absolutely rocks. This is the best lab anybody's had since maybe Voodoo Man. Yeah. Like, describe this lab. It's good.
It's colored.
Yes.
It's full of your mad scientist paraphernalia, all sorts of beakers and bubbling vials. The cool thing is, though, they all have different colored liquids in there, in them.
Yes.
There's this really psychedelic lighting throughout that reminded me of the lighting in Hercules. And
that's exactly what I thought.
The Hercules movie and the Haunted World.
Yes.
It's smoky. It's got mad scientist stuff. There's a basement level that has a skeleton. It has an elevator that opens up with this like crazy theremin-y noise.
I think we grabbed some of that. Actually, Brad, if you want to play that now. This is right after the interview. We start to hear this whenever the zombie girls are around and the door is opening. Here it is. Yeah.
Would the world not be better if all elevators made that noise?
Yes. But I just want to say, like, we don't hate bad movies. We just love good bad movies. This is a good bad movie, right?
It is, yeah. It is a really low... So there are some definitions of bad movie that this movie meets.
Right.
It is very low budget.
Correct. Right?
So everything we're describing is done in the lowest budget way it could possibly be done.
Ye Lin turns into a bat several times and it's very fake.
Yeah.
And Ye Lin's skyscraper towers made out of cardboard.
Clearly. and those things don't matter because it's a competent director and competent actors who are totally selling what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if we compare it to last week, which isn't fair, the only great performance in there is Satana, right? Because she's really selling it, but everybody else is sort of waltzing through it or not doing very well. Whereas everybody's crushing it and it's just great.
Can we talk about his zombies?
We have to talk about his zombies. Yes. They're so good. So let's do that.
This is about
first.
The part of the movie. So having hired Angelica, I mean, his goal is to turn her into one of his zombie servants.
Correct.
So why don't you tell us about the zombies? How do they work and how does he create them?
So he creates them. He injects them with something once he's sort of hypnotized them in his lab. But not just injection. So what he does first is he conducts a ritual, like on his knees in the middle of his laboratory, where he summons the power of King Devil. Then he goes into like a medical fridge and pulls out a syringe. And after he's conducted the ritual, he injects Angelica with it and turns her into a zombie, which I just think is amazing. Do you want to add any color to any mustard to that? Like
they're just great. The zombies, my favorite detail of the zombies is that when they're not in use. The where they go to rest is in these two coffins.
Yeah.
it looks great. They rise out of them like vampires.
I think they are undead zombies too. I think they have been killed.
So.
And then whatever's in that syringe brings them back to the undead state where they can move around.
I think you're right. So he basically controls their souls. I'm actually going to do a quote of what he says to Angelica now that she's a zombie. And then,
I think I wrote down the exact same quote.
So he says, "From now on, you possess no will of your own or any memory of your existence in the world of the living. You will obey my orders and you will worship King Devil and you will refer to me as my master." So he is pretty serious about this. Now, I wanted to say something else about them because this is another wonderful, like, don't have a big budget to make your zombies look creepy. Get creative. So one of the aspects of these zombies is when they're together, they move in synchronization. So when they get up out of their coffins, they both step to the right at the exact same time and pull up their left foot at the exact same time. And they're totally in sync the whole time. There's a wonderful moment coming up where they're tracking Yelin's hench people. And we don't see them, but they come out from behind a tree in synchronization, like both sides of the tree, and just start walking forward. And they're just, I don't know, it's just so perfect.
Yeah, super fun. And they manage to be kind of creepy.
Yes, these zombies work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we should say they retain basically their full intelligence from life. They don't have will of their own, but they can talk, they can adapt, they can make plans, they can help strategize with Dr. Satan about the missions that they do. So I think these might be our most, you know, they're very, except that they're creepy and undead.
Right.
They have all the faculties of a living person, which, by the way, is the sort of zombie you would want if you were a zombie master.
Exactly.
Finally, in 1968, someone's making zombies that would be useful to have around.
Yes. So let's move along. He starts by having his zombies track Yelin, finds out where he lives, and then he goes in to kill Yelin, and he tricks him into drinking poison. But what happens, Andy, when Yelin?
He shoots him with
a
dart.
Yeah, let me go back.
And in another very James Bondy thing, he has a cane that is actually a dart,
a blowgun.
Yeah.
So he
shoots Yelin, who's lying in bed with the dart, and then he gloats for a minute. Aha! No human could survive this deadly poison. And then Yelin laughs because he is a
vampire.
Yes.
Now they don't call him a vampire. They just call him a black magician, but they like show off that he's got the teeth and they show him transforming to not having the teeth. And he does bite Dr. Satan on the neck in the scene.
Yeah. Can we talk? Let's talk just real quick about the vampire.
Yes.
So Western vampires are different from Eastern vampires.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, I learned this through D&D basically, but so he doesn't follow all the rules. He follows some, but not all of the rules of Western vampires.
He does react to a cross, for example.
He reacts to an upside down
cross. An upside down cross. Yeah.
A black upside down cross.
Yes.
He can go out in the day, but he can be staked through the heart with a wooden stake.
Correct.
And he could turn into a bat. The world's fakest looking bat.
Yes.
So there's some scenes where the bat like flutters around and lands on someone, and it's just, I don't know how they kept a straight face.
But like, they managed to sell it. So
yeah.
Generally from here on out, what happens is, you know, Yelin is taking Dr. Sorensen's formula, and he's made some tests, he knows it works. He's got to set up a bigger lab to actually produce the gold. And most of the rest of the movie is a sort of back and forth of Dr. Satan trying to get the formula from Yelin and Yelin resisting him and kind of outsmarting him for a minute. And this is most of the second act. Now,
do you have a favorite exchange, like encounter or exchange? They go back, they ping pong back and forth of like, who has the formula, and then one of them will get the formula and then it will be stolen back by the other one. And one of them will get killed or seemingly killed and not really be dead. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. Like I love when he kidnaps Dea, but
yes, let's talk about that one. Cause that was my favorite one too.
But before that, there's a wonderful scene where Yelin now knows where
he has put a tracker on the formula. He gives the formula to Dr. Satan. And has that happened before? No, I think Yalin comes to his lab using a magic wand to investigate it, and he finds his zombies. And Dr. Satan comes upon him, and they're about to have a big fight, and then Yalin just pulls out a revolver and shoots him.
Yes, and he empties the revolver into him.
And Dr. Satan calls the zombies. They save him, and then they put him through the zombification process, so he survives, which is awesome. Yeah. That's one of my favorites. I want to talk about this kidnapping, and we can sort of go through the rest of the plot of what's going on here. But
sure. Yeah, take your time. I didn't mean to rush us ahead too much.
No, that's fine. This is the important – there's several important things about the kidnapping. So once Yalin has this bigger lab, the zombies find out where that is, and Dr. Satan takes one of them, and they kidnap Dea in the middle of the night after she's leaving.
And remember, Dea is Yalin's, like, his assistant, but also seemingly his love.
Yes, exactly. And they're going to ransom her to get the formula. Here's the cool thing. So in this scene, Dr. Satan has a different car. And so they force her into this car, and you only see the back of it, but it is a red car with a white top and huge tail fins. And it is, in fact, I triple checked, a 1958 Plymouth Fury.
Oh, finally.
Yes, it is.
Is
no
it really
lie.
A 58?
It's a 58. And I thought, and there was like, it could have been a Belvedere, but like the side stripes in the Belvedere are different. It is a Plymouth Fury and it's a 58. And I couldn't have been more excited. In this absurd film, and it's only in one scene.
I can't think of a more fun movie for it to finally
appear
in.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Now we know who John's rooting for.
Yes,
whoever's driving that car.
Dr. Satan is my man. Sorry, I hate to spoil it, but... And there's a plot where, the next thing is, they're going to give Dr. Satan is the formula and they're going to trade for it. And he says he injects Dea with a poison that he will give them the antidote for so that he knows that Yalin isn't lying. But the poison just turned out to be distilled water. So it's like this cat and mouse game.
It's totally from a spy movie.
Yes.
My favorite part of it was that so they've captured Dea. And they're going to ransom her for the formula. But she's like, we can make a deal, or basically.
She says, I like to be on the winning side.
Yeah. She kind of makes a deal with Dr. Satan that they'll get the formula and then she'll stick with him because he'll be the winner. Do you think she was being genuine or is she being a tricky?
I think she was being tricky.
I think so too. Yes.
Yes. And at one point I put down the zombies encourage Dr. Satan is sort of worried that he's not going to complete his task and he'll have internal damnation. And I wrote down the zombies encourage him and they sound like ChatGPT. Like, you're doing great, master. Like, one of my other favorite things is that, so they get this gold and the gold is radioactive and it's going to causes an explosion. I couldn't quite follow what happened, but the zombies and Dr. Satan are buried in a cave-in, and Dr. Satan dies, and we actually see King Devil in hell re-summoning Dr. Satan, saying, "You failed me, Plutarco Satan. You're damned forever." And he begs for his life back. And as I swear to God, it's actually moving when you're here and Dr. Satan is begging not to be damned forever and to be given one more chance. It's so delightful.
Yes. And it's hard to overstate how fun it is when basically any of these characters interact with each other.
Yes.
So like Dr. Satan and Yalin there's many scenes where they're confronting each other and they just have just wonderful banter.
Yep.
And Dea is great too in every scene she's in. She's like really in love with Yalin and it's just a lot of really entertaining interactions to watch.
Yeah, and they are saying things like, "He has won the battle, but I shall win the war." Like it's all this kind of stuff.
So I had another favorite scene. I don't remember exactly where it came in the movie, but one of my favorite scenes was one where Yalin believes that he has the upper hand.
Yep.
He thinks this at like six times throughout the movie. He's like a Bond villain. Like surely was the end of
he
Mr.
must
Bond.
Be dead now. Yeah.
Yeah. So he and Dea are doing a little tea ceremony and kind of gloating about how they've won. And there's this wonderful sequence where the police, a policeman shows up.
Yep.
And they go through this big, long, wonderful banter about where the policeman is trying to basically arrest Yaelin. And Yaelin is being super polite and a gracious host. And then Daya, as soon as the policeman turns around, Daya shoots him in the back.
Yeah, she shoots two policemen, and each time it causes them to have to, like, flee the country. Like, they have to leave their lab, and then they have to flee the country. In any case, this all ends up in a lab where Dr. Satan and Yaelin are having a fight. And here's where I would like to, like, this is not an insult to me. You know, I want to be clear. I would like to compare Dr. Satan to James Bond, but Roger Moore's James Bond, for two reasons. First of all, he has the look, right? Like, he's super charming. Also, during the fist fight, what is his favorite move, producer Brad? What is Roger Moore's favorite fighting move?
The karate chop.
The judo chop. Yes. So
I wrote this down as like the Captain Kirk.
Yes.
Because he does that Captain Kirk haymaker weird, the thing he uses against the Gorn.
Exactly. The wah. Yeah. So in any case, so there's a judo chop. The zombies show up with upside down crosses. And in the end, Dr. Satan stabs Yaelin, but Yaelin isn't killed. However, Dr. Satan has been hiding a wooden stake, and he stabs him through the heart.
Yes.
However, it's not all over, because this is Yaelin's lab, and he's left a bomb, which Dr. Satan finds, and it's tick, 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 just like a Bond movie. He's got to defuse it, but what happens, Andy?
He's too late. He thinks he's defused it, and then it goes off abruptly, and the movie ends.
And the movie ends. Done. Yes.
So it's so good. During that, there's a lot of fun stuff in that scene. First, so Daya at one point gets strangled to death by the two zombie women.
I have the same note. She has to lie there for like 10 minutes. Yes.
She is in the most uncomfortable looking position. She's like sprawled across this table.
Yeah.
And she has to sit there for like a 10-minute scene. It's really delightful.
Yeah.
And secondly, the crucifixes are not being used against the zombies, but I think this is our first crucifix employed, at least employed as a weapon against the supernatural in a zombie movie.
I think so, because we've had some like references to Catholicism, but I think you commented early on, like, there's a surprising lack of religious talk in these zombie movies, given the nature of the undead compared to vampires, for example.
Exactly. And really, of course, the crucifixes are here because it is a vampire in this zombie movie.
Right.
So are the crucifixes upside down because that's like the holy symbol of King Devil?
I don't know, but it they make a big point. And this is another wonderful synchronized moment with the two female zombies where they're both holding the cross in the same hand and they pivot like they're on a swivel together towards Yaelin as he's moving around. It's wonderful.
Yeah, so all right. Is there anything really fun that we didn't talk about that you want to call out? Because we're at the end of the movie.
We are. I just wanted to say, like, every line in this film is delivered with incredible gravitas and seriousness. I don't think there's a joke in this movie.
Yeah. There are a couple of scenes that feel like they're meant to be funny. There's one at the end where, in succession, first Yaelin and then Dr. Satan have to deal with this, like, bored airport.
Oh, that's right.
Airport. Clerk or whatever, which I don't know if that was supposed to be
funny.
I think it was.
I think that's as close as this film gets to humor, but there's not like a joke in this movie.
Yeah, it's not like a ha-ha sort of movie.
And then the whole thing, that sound effect music we played, the whole movie is infused with music like that throughout, and it just adds to the whole ambiance of the thing.
So, all right, so we're at the end of the movie, so I got to ask, who were you rooting for?
I'm team...
You already let it slip.
I'm team Dr. Satan. I'm sorry.
So I'm team Yaelin.
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
You know what got me is his relationship with Daya. They just have a delightful, like, evil romantic relationship going that made me kind of want to pull for him. I felt bad for him because kidnapping Daya was kind of a low blow by Dr. Satan.
Very low blow, yes. Yeah. I agree.
I mean, if your name is Dr. Satan and you're working for King Lucifer, King Devil, you should be doing low blows all the time, but still.
Yeah, no, I am attuned to Dr. Satan's plight of internal life can keep getting gaslit by King Devil to do his bidding.
Is this felt really familiar to me? Is there like a famous comic character or something like that, or a famous literary character that like is stuck like this, like he can't die until he... This just rung a bell for me.
Yeah, there's a.
It's got this like myth. I mean, this is a very silly movie, but that has like kind of mythic gravitas to it.
You brought up Hercules and the Haunted World. That's the movie that we've seen that this reminded me of. I'm trying to think of what you're saying. And I mean, there's a fictional character. My Carl Edward Wagner's Kane is this way, but he's a completely different character. I think there is something like this, and I cannot recall what it is.
Listeners, if this reminded you of a literary figure or a comic book character or something, let us know.
This is not his attribute, but in a way, he reminded me kind of like John Constantine, where he's just sort of a badass kind of guy. You know what I mean? Yeah. And you just know he's the toughest one. So.
Well, yes. Obviously, I haven't seen any other of the Dr. Satan films. I would love to learn that they all end with him not, you know, getting killed and not being freed to pass into eternal rest.
That would be amazing.
Because he's just Satan's henchman for eternity. But yeah.
I love it.
So, hey, shall we go into our wrap-up questions?
Let's get into it.
All right. All right, John. Ian. Okay, this might be the first time we have a different answer to this question.
I believe
we have said yes to this question in every movie we've watched to date.
Yeah.
In Dr. Satan versus the Black Magic, is there a hero party?
No, because I think the two groups are competitors, are equal competitors. It's called Dr. Satan, but having seen it, it's Dr. Satan. You know, we were arguing about the interpretation. Is it and the Black Magic or versus the Black Magic? But this is why versus the Black Magic works, because Ye Lin is the Black Magic. So it's about these two groups combating each other. There's no hero here.
Yeah, two rival villain groups. And then, you know, the police are only very they're really only present so that they can get killed every now and then.
Correct.
So how do our two rival villain parties do?
Well, this is interesting because what happens to the zombies, the female zombies, is just before he has to defuse the bomb, he says, I've got a test to make sure this formula works. So he's running around in the lab and he, in a gesture of grace, releases them from their bondage to him and they sort of evaporate. So
yeah, it's like they're being beamed up to the Enterprise.
Yeah. And so everybody gets killed. All of them.
Yeah. 100% fatality.
100% fatality. Yes.
Except that Dr. Satan will be coming back, I'm sure, the next time King Devil needs a job done.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, what kind of zombie are we dealing with? What's the zombie strain at play here?
So I think this is super interesting. They are both mythically created because there's a magic ritual, and science zombies because there's a formula he's created and injects them with. So they're like a hybrid.
Yeah.
So they're black magic science zombies.
Is this the first time we have seen? We have seen plenty of movies that toyed with the divide between science and magic.
Yeah.
Have there been anywhere both science and magic have been used together?
Not like this. I feel like this is pretty unique. It's like they're two sides of the same coin to these guys.
Yeah.
You know, like Ye Lin has to make a giant lab and he uses black magic to defeat his foes, you know?
Haven't we had a couple where the science is trying to reverse engineer the magic?
Yeah, I think Woman Eater, right, was that. There was the magic, the zombie magic that the guy promised to share with him and he was trying to scientifically create it.
That's right.
And I think Zombies on Broadway is the same thing. Bela Lugosi was the zombie master in the
lab
trying to recreate what the locals do.
Yes.
Okay.
But
very good.
But in those cases, like I think there's a suggestion that what the original source isn't really magic, it's just a undiscovered science, where in this case, like, the magic is super explicit, I guess is the difference I'd make.
How are these zombies destroyed or killed, John?
They're really tough to kill. And in fact, they don't get killed. They're just released.
There is a delightful scene where one of Ye Lin's henchmen throws a switchblade into the back of zombie Angelica, I think.
Yeah.
And not only does she not get taken down by it, but she walks around for the rest of the scene with the knife just sticking out of her back.
It's pretty great.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
So do we have any new, maybe we've already discussed this. Do we have any new strains or zombie firsts in the way that the zombies are portrayed here?
Well, I think you said it. These are our smartest zombies to date. They act like zombies in every way. They're under control of a zombie master. They have a flat aspect. They walk around slowly. but they have human level intelligence and can communicate in a way. So I feel like that's unique to these zombies.
I think, yeah, I mean, we have seen zombies with some intelligence, like the Four Skulls of Jonathan Drake.
Yep.
We've got intelligent zombies, but I don't know. These ones felt like the most capable and competent.
They're interesting because, like, the zombies in Four Skulls of Jonathan Drake, they just were like regular people who happened to be immortal. These zombies act like zombies, but also have intelligence, if that makes
that's
sense.
It.
So maybe these zombies have no willpower, which is what differentiates them from the Jonathan Drake ones.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Can these zombies return to being human?
No, they're dead.
Yep. All right, John, this will be interesting. How many of your pillars of the zombie movie can be found in this movie? There are four of them that you laid out at the beginning of this podcast. Let's see how this movie does.
All right.
In this movie, is there an apocalypse?
No, there isn't. Though that suggested that if Ye Lin were to get the gold, he would become the most powerful creature in the world and would control the world. So there's an implied like world domination plan, just like a Bond movie, but it's not an apocalypse.
It's not a zombie apocalypse, no.
It's not a zombie apocalypse.
Is this correct? Ye Lin's plan is to basically make so much gold that he can buy the souls of everybody.
Yes.
Is that it?
That's his plan.
Okay. So he's just going to corrupt the human race essentially with his gold.
With his gold, correct.
All right. Is there contagion in this movie?
No, you have to be turned into a zombie by Dr. Satan.
Are there tough moral choices in this movie?
I would say yes. Right at the beginning when producer Brad pointed it out, you know, do you have a family? And she says, I'm alone. He is making a choice that he's going to turn her into the zombie because it's the best moral choice of this group of things. So I'm going to say yes.
I think there's a little bit of a moral choice going on in Dr. Satan making the choice to continue serving rather than, I don't know, maybe not.
Well, he finds his torment in the underworld unbearable. So he's willing to come to Earth to do these horrible things that I think he has a moral compass that tells him are wrong so he can escape his eternal torment. And I think that's a tough moral choice.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Does this movie have loved ones turning against you?
Not really. Not in the sense we mean it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you have some questions for me then, John.
Yeah, so is this, as a 1960s movie, does this have an increase in violence and grittiness?
It does not.
No.
It's pretty tame. There's, there's not maybe tiny bits of blood, but nothing gruesome, nothing gory. Even when people get, you know, shot a whole bunch of times, it's treated with sort of comic booky levels of stakes.
Yes. So do our heroes question authority?
So this is interesting.
Yes.
So, I mean, throughout this movie, I kept thinking about things like the comics code and other early sort of self-imposed rules that the entertainment industry, at least in the US and in Britain, put on themselves. And I remember, you know, one of the early comics code was that the good guys always have to win.
Right.
Right? In the end, you can't show evil prospering. This is, you know, I mean, this is a very silly movie.
Yep.
So I don't know if, and I don't know if Mexico had this, you know, the same sorts of restrictions on its art, but this is a movie, you know, where I guess the bad guys get their comeuppance. And so, but it's not because like the good guys defeat them, you know, it's just because the bad guys basically kill each other.
I would say that our main groups here are questioning authority. These are competing plans to take over the world, right? And undermine, you know, the normal world. So,
I mean, I think what this movie does, it has that delightful sense where you really are rooting for these villains.
Yes.
And that isn't a direct questioning of authority exactly, but it doesn't seem like something you would have seen in very many movies before this, where you really genuinely are delighted to watch the antics of the villains. You aren't, you know, I don't know. It just feels a little different.
Yeah, it does. It does. Now, how about focus on a hero's inner life or personalized horror?
I want to say yes.
I agree.
Because Dr. Satan, we've discussed his existential crisis at length already, but he is a tormented anti-hero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so I think that qualifies.
Do we have a sense of fear, societal, or fear of crime, societal chaos, or anarchy here?
I don't think in any serious way, no.
No, there is a point where they like, where the cops are following young Ye Lin as Dea leaves a string of bodies behind her. But it's not that strong, yeah. How about a sense of looming apocalypse or psychological stress?
I think this gets a soft yes from me. We do feel the pressure that Dr. Satan is under to do this mission or face King Devil's wrath.
Yeah.
I did really like the scene where he dies and King Devil is like, you screwed up, and he has to talk King Devil into giving him one more chance. So I do think that that counts for the psychological stress part of this.
Agreed. So last one, horrors without solutions or lack of clear villains to defeat. This is an interesting one, actually.
Well, it's all villains.
Right.
So,
and nobody wins.
And no one wins. So yeah, I don't think that this has horrors without solutions in the way that we meant it.
Yeah.
When we devised this question, but it is a sidestep from the way that most of our movies handle this theme.
And it almost feels like a precursor to like late 60s and 70s films where the villains do win or the bad guys, you know, lose or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Anti-hero is, this is our first real anti-hero, I think.
Yeah. I mean, for sure by the 80s and probably earlier, you know, you were, when you go to a Friday the 13th movie, you are pretty much rooting for Jason,
yes.
Right? I mean, you're there to see what Jason does.
What he gets up to.
This is a much more lighthearted take on what is going to become a common horror thing, which is that the villains or the monsters really are the most interesting parts of the story.
Yeah, like Freddy versus Jason, which is a misguided attempt to capture that same kind of energy. So
right.
Yeah. All right, Andy, I hand it back to you.
Okay, well, we always wrap up with our three traditional questions. John, okay, this is going to be fun. Would you and I survive in the zombie world of Dr. Satan versus the black magic?
Absolutely not. I'm just such a pale imitation compared to these two total dudes. I think they would, I don't know how, if I were involved in this, I would be a victim almost immediately.
And they're like, you know, they could get you wherever you are because they're not just villainous wizards.
Right.
They've got all these like espionage skills.
I know they're villainous black magic using wizard vampires who know how to do spycraft.
Yes, exactly. All right, John, is this a zombie movie or a movie with zombies?
Well, I hate to say it. I think it's a movie with zombies because it's really about this battle for the formula, right? It's not about zombies. Yeah. However, the zombies are really good zombies, is what I'll say.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll agree. We didn't mention there's a delightful scene where when Ye Lin first realizes that Dr. Satan has two zombie servants, he says something like, "Zombies, how disgusting."
Yes.
Like it's beneath.
You missed it because he went to the lair of the zombies and he went to kill them by biting them. And when he bit the second one, he goes, "Oh, zombies, disgusting." It was like the taste of the zombies.
Yeah. And that was extra funny because he was biting them in his bat form. And so this very hilarious looking bat is like flapping around their necks. It's very cute.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And lastly, John, I think I know where you're going with this one, but do you recommend this movie? First, as a fun movie that is worth anyone to check out. And secondly, does this have special interest for our zombie loving listeners?
I'm going to say a strong yes to both. The movie is an absolute delight. It's a hoot. You'll laugh. You'll enjoy. You'll get invested in these characters in a way. And I think the zombies are actually really interesting. They're this special kind of creepy zombie that we haven't really seen. So I yes to both for me.
Yeah. Yes to both. I have nothing to add to that. This was a truly unexpected delight.
Yeah, agreed.
All right. Well, that means it's time for the scariest part of this episode. And this is a particularly scary version of this little segment because Brad is about to reveal to us what we're watching next. And if it's what I think it is, ooh, I'm excited.
If it's not what you think it is, what happens to me?
I don't know. Do you really want to find out, I guess, is my question.
All right. Well,
don't do this to us, Brad. Don't do this.
Okay. Well, a year and a half in, we finally made it to Night of the Living Dead. So Yay. Let's play a little bit of the trailer.
Night of total terror. Night of the living dead, the dead who live on living flesh.
Yes, Andy, we're here.
We finally
Producer
made
Brad,
it.
We made it. How I'm pumped.
30 years of movies and maybe 55, 60-ish movies,
yeah.
And we've arrived, right?
And what I love is that I think from a certain perspective, Night of the Living Dead is the start of the modern zombie craze. That's why it's such a milestone for us. And we spent all this time learning about how that's not quite true, that there's this whole extra history, and now we're going to unravel that in the face of the granddad of them all. So I'm super pumped.
It's going to be great.
All right, folks.
And it's exciting that it's got a Criterion version of it. So we get to see a really good video and audio of a film, which we often don't get. It's been since Carnival of Souls that we've had one of this quality.
You know what? And I'm excited for that, too. This isn't one where we have to be like, oh, I wonder if this is any good. We've all seen it. We all know it's just this amazing piece of Americana and gonzo filmmaking. And yeah, I'm in. I'm ready.
Let's do it.
I'll be honest. We started this podcast and I have resisted rewatching it.
Same here.
Since we started it. I was saving it up. So I will be watching it this week fresh. Also, we'll be watching all the Criterion extras. We also have a documentary we've got. I've been reading interviews with George Romero. We're all doing research and digging up stuff. Andy's going to help us with a deep dive into 1968 that we've been promising. So it's going to be an extra special episode. Next episode.
And if anyone wants to watch it, it currently is on HBO.
Yes, HBO Max. So go for it. This is a great one to watch first. We can't expect people to watch Dr. Satan and the Black Magic first. So, folks, if you've got an hour and a half, this is a good one to watch. Go watch Night of the Living Dead on HBO Max and come back in 2 weeks to hear us talk about it. We're going to take a little extra time on this one, and we appreciate your patience. While you're waiting, don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. Please give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And also, send us an email. Let us know what you think at zombiestrainspodcast@gmail.com. All right, folks, that's everything. We'll see you in 2 weeks for Night of the Living Dead. You've been listening to Zombie Strains. We'll be back next episode to talk about another zombie movie. If you enjoyed our podcast, please take a moment to rate us in your podcast app of choice. Tell a friend. Follow us on Instagram at Zombie Strains. All of this helps like-minded people find the show. See you next time.